which is kind of like what we were like doing at the live show at the time. So it was kind of like really rugged and raw.
Nice.
But yeah, really good memories attached to that, man.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then the a couple of years later, like the second album, which was kind of definitely a bit more like the difficult second album. They say you have like your whole life to write your first album, and then the second one you got to do in like a year or whatever, you know,
right?
Or 2 years. But it was definitely like, I mean, between making the first and second album, we were definitely like maturing, you know, as people. We were like 18, 19 making the first record, and maybe like 21, 22 making the second one. You kind of changed quite a bit in that time, I think.
For sure. That's a
Sound was definitely getting a bit more mature. Songwriting was maturing. We were kind of going for, we kind of knew who we were a lot more in terms of like presentation, in terms of image, and kind of, yeah, stylistically, like what we were going for and stuff.
Tell us what that is, like at that time.
I think, you know, at this point, we were like way more like deeper into kind of like more specific eras of like Jamaican music.
Okay.
And, but at the same time, trying to like represent it in a way that like was us and authentic to us.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And not imitate or, you know, pretend that we are the originators of, but actually being like the children of something and who we were and where we were from. Do you know what I mean? And very London centric and very, just a lot more like sound aware, you know, working with Prince Fatty.
Yeah.
He really like beat the punk rock out of us, like making that second album and making us have like that kind of the heavy discipline and do it recording to tape, do it again, do it like this, play it faster, play it slower. Like, you know what I mean? Like make sure the groove is like locked. But all these kind of things was like the big difference between the first and second record for sure.
How was it working with him?
Yeah, great, man. We still have a working relationship to this day. He's been involved in some form or another, been involved in every album since.
Gotcha.
Yeah. He's a wizard, you know?
Yeah, he's a great producer. I mean, I love his work. He did, for me, he I don't know if you've heard the new Stick Figure EP that he remixed.
I've heard some stuff, yeah.
For me, I mean, I've been a Stick Figure fan, but this EP really, for me, put them over the top, and it just shows his work, you know. I think he's great. In my opinion, he's great. So
yeah, I heard the Stick Figure stuff, man. And big up Horseman and the Rassites as well, who played all the instruments on that EP, because that's a huge part of it as well, man. It's having legitimate.
Exactly.
You know, those are all like London, you know, heavy, legitimate Rasta reggae musicians,
yeah,
bringing their thing to that as well, which can't go unnoticed, you know what I mean?
I didn't know that was the Rastites, but you know, I haven't heard from them in years, but that's definitely a band that was always on my radar. They've been quiet.
Yeah, they're like the main, I would say. Yeah, like definitely like Cash and Jamel. They're kind of like the main like go-to. And well, you got Horseman on drums there, who's not in the Rassites, but Cash and Jamel and Cyrus from the Rassites on the keys. They're kind of, they're the go-to English session band here.
Oh, nice.
For like, you know, Johnny Clark or Horace Andy comes over and stuff. They go to them straight, yeah.
That's good to know. So, all right, let's move on to FM, which was... would it be correct to say that that was more like a concept album?
Sure, that was our kind of go at making what we believe to be one of the only reggae concept albums we can think of.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, and you know, and it seemed very fitting to me because it seemed like you guys were emulating pirate radio.
As you said on the... Well, I like to say, welcome London town, and wakey wakey, rise and shine. It's all about the big FM, frequency moderation. The hottest day in London, recorded for a while, so make sure you keep it here. Coming up later on, it's the Dancehall Dilemmas with Dr.
Ray. Yeah, exactly, man. Like, you know, pirate, it's funny, like, that element of it. Don't forget also in the, I guess we weren't like, I guess it's kind of cool, but at the same time, for how like much that album took us globally, the pirate radio kind of element to it didn't really like translate outside of the UK that well, you know what I mean? Like in even mainland Europe and definitely in the US, like that kind of side of it, like people didn't really like understand it as good. But like pirate radio, it's like such a huge part of like reggae music history and like music, black music and music in general in like the UK is like, yeah, like pirate radio. Like we've rehearsed next to like pirate radio station playing Jungle like our whole career. Like I used to drive around in the car, the Fiat Punto that I bought, which I learned to drive to like drive the band to gigs. You should just get stuck on the pirates the whole time. You know what I mean? Like that, you turn on like any car. I mean, now obviously, like they've all got digital and you got your Bluetooth or whatever on all the cars. But if you go on the FM thing, like you're still like getting, you know what I mean, from house to jungle to garage to dance hall. Like that is just, you know what I mean? The underground sound and the airwaves in London, man, are still about. Well, not, you know, like it's definitely not heavy influential like it probably was in like the 80s, 90s and early 2000s, because the internet has definitely killed the need to like risk jail or fines,
right,
having a pirate radio transmitter. But but it's definitely like pirate radio was like the continuation of like sound system culture.
Yeah, I think it was
in honestly, London significantly. Yeah,
me personally, I think it was a very significant and relevant concept because, you know, and it's a shame that it wasn't so understood and accepted throughout the rest of the world because it's so influential in England as a whole on the development of underground music and how it became, some of that got on, you know, BBC and got on some of the bigger stations was because of pirate radio. You know, yeah. Believe it or not, here in Florida, we can relate because especially South Florida, there was one of the biggest stations in South Florida was a pirate radio station for many years. And so, you know, and I being a radio person, I used to listen to pirate. But I never went the pirate route because I was a registered, licensed FCC, which runs the radio in the U.S., broadcaster. So I didn't want to jeopardize my license at the time because, you know, you had to have a permit to and a certificate. So I love the concept of the album and how you guys did that. And I think it plays such a significant role in the development of underground music in the U.K. as a whole. You know?
Thanks, man. Yeah, and to be clear, none of us come from pirate radio.
Yeah, no, I didn't think
we're so. Merely paying tribute to how we like got onto a lot of music. And
yeah,
at the time, man, people were like telling us, like, because that was the album, the record that took us to the US for the first time and stuff.
Right.
People were telling us like, "You're crazy for like doing this. Like, no one's gonna get it." And we were like, "It's fine." Like, it was funny to us, like the album to me, actually, like I listened to it back recently, funny enough, because we got like the test pressings of the latest pressing. So I actually kind of had to listen to the test. It was the first time I'd listened to the album in ages. And we were just, to me, it just sounds like fun. We were just having so much fun making that album. Like, it's pretty goofy. Like, you know, there's like comedic skits. Like when I used to listen to like, yeah, Dr. Dre and Exhibit and Eminem albums and the Dumps and the Biggie Smalls, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like the kind of Queens of the Stone Age, Songs for the Deaf, that was like a huge influence on that record. Like skits and just like humor and just having fun in the studio creating something, man. Like, that's what I think of when I think of FM.
Yeah, well, you know, that's great though. I mean, fun is always good, and if you guys were having fun, there should be no remorse. There should be, you know, regardless of what people were saying, you know, it should be about having fun and good vibes. You know, it's, you know, I don't know. I love the concept personally, and I thought it should have been a little bit more light shined on it, you know. But unfortunately, like you said, people didn't understand, you know, which is to each his own at the same time.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, don't get me wrong, like the songs are most important, and
yeah,
people really like the songs.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm glad, I would rather people like the songs than be like, oh, the best thing about it was the skits. But
right,
it's fine. It was, you know, it was cool to us. So it's all good.
And at the time, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
You know, so moving forward, you know, the it's still the latest album, you know, Swimming Lessons. Why, you know, I mean, for me, that album was just like head and shoulders above anything that came out in 2019. I'm a old school punk rocker myself. I love punk rock. I love the raw energy. I'm obviously a reggae is part of my roots and my foundation. But you guys just kept it, you know, even still to this day, even though that album is very well produced, it's still very raw. And it's, I don't know, for me, it is one still, is gonna be one of the best albums for this century for me. I won't see the end of this century, but trust me, it will still be one of my favorite albums to the day I die. You know, it will be ranked up there with, you know, The Specials, Fishbone.
Holy shit, man.
You know what I mean? For me.
Wow. Thank you, dude.
I'm just saying for me. It just, you know, and there's a record on there to me, which is, I guess it's like the title track, Learn to Swim. I'm assuming that's kind of the throw off of the title track, but I don't know. We'll talk about that. Learn to Swim to me is the best version of reggae, punk rock transition. Those transitions in that song are, I mean, to me, nobody can touch that. Bad Brains, none of nobody.
Shit, man.
Nobody can. That is the best reggae punk rock song I've ever heard in my life. I grew up in the punk rock, and you know, I come from the root of reggae music. Okay, that record is the record, that the song, the record for me. And how did that record really come about? Because those, from the drum roll into the transition of reggae to punk, is just flawless. Flawless. Like, if that's the perfect punk rock reggae song, how did that come about? That has always been my biggest question for you guys.
Wow, thanks, man. I mean, definitely that song, maybe not so much in its melody and the chords it uses, but the kind of stylistic transition you're talking about, that's like all Bad Brains influence, you know?
No, I know.
Yeah, we would have to take our hats off to the Brains for like just existing in this world to even let us know that something like that is possible. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like that. I mean, it's funny. People that, you know, our first record, so like maybe that wasn't so surprising to you, but like people that got onto us on the second or third record that mm-hmm. heard that as the first song were like, what are you guys doing with this, like the rock thing? And we were like, I don't think you heard our first album, man, because You know what I mean? We were doing the kind of like reggae in the verses, heavy in the choruses, like 10 years ago. But I just felt like we maybe just like honed it with that song in particular, like kind of, just like made it a bit more us by this point, you know, and the transitions. Funny enough, that song we actually recorded in a really mad way. Like what you're hearing is actually like two different recording sessions, you know? So we like did it. We did it all up. Like what you hear on like the reggae side of the song, We like recorded it and then recorded the heavy bits in that studio session too. But then later we actually went to another studio with another engineer that we knew would be more of a specialist in that field.
Okay.
Recorded the heavy sections and then spliced it and then mixed it down so that it sounds... Yeah, we were on some mad experimental like mission with swimming lessons, man. But
man, if I could,
that was how we knew we wanted to do it. Yeah.
I would love an album of just that stuff.
Cool. All right, I'll bear it in mind, man. Yeah, we're starting to make moves for next one writing wise now. So that's noted because I would like that too.
Yeah, you know, I mean, now that I hear you explain it, that you did the reggae and then you kind of did, as you put it, the harder stuff and then mesh them together. That makes sense.
We just really wanted to like kind of create the sonic experience where like you're like kind of being transported.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With the crack of a snare. And we just felt like to do that, we have to physically transport ourselves to another environment to kind of create that effect. You know what I mean?
Well, I think now that you explain that, that makes sense. And I think that's part of the reason that it's
like,
so
it's a
well
different
done.
Drum kit, you know,
exactly,
like in a different room. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. No, I think that makes sense. And that's why it's like, it's done so well. It makes total sense. And obviously whoever mixed and engineered that and put it all together is to be complimented as well.
Yeah. Big up Prince Fatty and Pete Miles on that. Mixed job, man. Yeah,
you know what? I'd love to hear I'd love to hear just the reggae version and just the punk version. That would be it.
Yeah, wow. I'm sure on a hard drive on the Pro Tools file somewhere we could make that some rarities thing one day. Yeah,
I might have to come over there and stick somebody up to get that one, huh? Well, so let me ask you. So that was the first single off the album, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
And is that song basically like the title track?
Like the swimming, like it has the word swimming lessons in it. But when picking the album, that existed before we knew that's what the album was going to be called, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But there's quite a few, if you listen keenly, There's quite a few lyrics across the record that kind of pertain to like swimming and water and drowning and things like that, which kind of cemented like that being like a theme across the whole album rather than just that song is kind of, I guess, the most on the nose,
right,
when it comes to that kind of thing.
That makes sense, because they're definitely, and it's, you know, it and as you speak of that, it's seems to be a little bit of a darker record, but at the same time it seems to be the most brilliant of all your records, in my opinion. And it shows your growth, it shows your maturity, it shows it seems like you really brought out all of the skins on one record, you know, because there's stuff on there that sounds like Weezer, you know, there's definitely stuff that sounds like classic roots reggae, Restless and New Kind of Friend, and then you got, you know, and the one with Jesse Royal, Love Is a Devil. It's just such a brilliant album, and it covers so much.
Thank you, man.
You can talk us through some of this, you know, because there's so many different flavors.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think with Swimming Lessons, it felt like, you know, we'd just done so much touring off the back of FM that when it kind of came to like, what's the next representation of our creativity going to be? We just wanted like no holds barred, basically.
Mm-hmm.
and yeah, and just, you know, just being like us and not really being bothered if the album kind of fit into anybody's else's like concept of like what makes like, you know, we were like another name you mentioned a minute ago, like Fishbone, like, yeah. And look and listening to some of those Fishbone records and, you know, like, Give a Monkey a Brain and stuff. They're going from like Swim to Servitude to Unyielding Conditioning. You know what I mean? And just like, yeah, the influences are so like disparaging,
yep,
in like the same body of work. That was a huge influence on us, man.
Okay.
Off of that. So, yeah, just wanting to, like, just represent all the personalities. We had, like, a lot to say on this album. I think it's definitely, like, lyrically the darkest album.
Yeah.
Everybody had a lot to get off their chest, kind of, you know, in personal terms and in, mate, I guess, in kind of in people terms too.
Right.
And, yeah, it's our longest out. It's like the most songs and stuff, but we just like, I think we just had so much like built up inside us in that like long touring cycle of FM that when it came to Swimming Lessons, we just wanted to let it all out, you know what I mean? In all ways. And, you know, feeling like, I remember just thinking like, it's our fourth album. Like most bands that I like don't have four great albums. Some of them don't even have four albums.
Correct, correct.
Do you know what I mean? So it's just like, if you stayed with us this long and you trusted us, then like hopefully you'll like it. And people really did, man. So
yeah.
So I think it's kind of, if anything, it's just given us like the confidence, not in like a cocky way where we can like just do anything and you'll suck it up, but just the confidence where like, you know, those kind of core genres that we come from and work with, that we don't have to live inside the kind of rules of them necessarily.
Right. Well,
an album sense, you know what I mean? Like obviously certain tracks, like you said, like the Lovers Rock and stuff, like we want to be like true to style in terms of arrangement in a lot of ways, but like within, you know, the creative bounds of like presenting an album, really feel like we can just do what we want if we believe in it and believe it's good now.
Yeah. I mean, me personally, I always think you should always have the freedom to do whatever it is you want to do musically. And I'm glad you didn't hold back because, you know, I think it really shows the brilliance of the record and the energy, the you know, the topics, the styles, the, you know, it really just makes for such a better album that there is that diversity. And you know, because the thing about it is somebody who loves reggae, somebody who loves ska, somebody who loves alternative rock, somebody who loves punk rock, somebody that likes even soul can actually like this album because they're all there. And they've all done with real true feeling of like you have roots in those fields of music, and it just shows the versatility of the band.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I'm really glad you get it. That's what we're going for. So.